Where we're struggling sometimes is there is this deep longing to go back to the good old days before the pandemic, which is human nature. But also, we're trying to now understand beyond the emergency, what does this look like? This component, how do we continue to embrace virtual components in some terms of access?
Hello there. My name is Monica Burns, and welcome to today's episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast. It is 2024, and whether you're joining for the first time, 100th time, or for the 200th time, I am so glad you're here. I have lots of exciting things in store for you this year. Each episode of the Easy EdTech Podcast is designed to give you ideas you can try yourself, share with a colleague, or bookmark for later in the school year. Get ready for stories from my time in the classroom, the work I do now with schools and districts, and my travels to different EdTech events, as well as practical ideas and inspiring stories from new guests each month. If we mention something you'd like to check out, you'll find the link to it in the show notes. So don't forget to head to my website, classtechtips.com/podcast, for all of the show notes and resources from today's episode. Today's episode is sponsored by WeVideo, a cloud-based interactive video platform used by millions of educators and students. With WeVideo, educators have everything they need to create dynamic learning opportunities in their classroom, easily assign pre-made video projects in just a few clicks, and collaborate with learners in real time. Embed interactive elements like multiple choice questions, free responses, and discussion prompts into new or existing video content and watch engagement soar. Meet students where they are in a medium they love and develop crucial 21st century skills like creativity, communication, critical thinking, and collaboration. WeVideo makes it easy to create videos, podcasts, GIFs, and more, no matter where you are. Try WeVideo today and maximize engagement, retention, and performance in the classroom. Visit WeVideo.com/education to learn more. This week's episode is titled, What We're Still Learning from Pandemic Teaching with Dr. Faiza Jamil. And I chat with Dr. Jamil, a Clemson University professor and co-author of the new book, Public Education in Turbulent Times. She shares stories, research, and things you can do right away to take what we learned from the emergency shift to remote learning in 2020 and put the lessons into practice 4 years later. Let's dive into the conversation. Welcome to the podcast. I'm very excited to chat with you today about a big, important topic, which are the things that we're still learning from pandemic teaching, from emergency virtual learning from the past several years. But before we dive into some of the lessons we're still learning, would love for listeners to hear a bit about your role in education. What does your day-to-day look like?
All right. Hi, my name is Faiza Jamil. I'm an associate professor of education and human development at Clemson University, and I am in a learning sciences program. So my day-to-day is about half doing research related to learning and education. And then I also teach some courses in human development for doctoral students and some undergraduate students who are about to become teachers. So I have sort of my hand in a few different places. And a lot of my research focuses on educational equity.
And so I'd imagine too, just hearing from your students and different stages of their careers, just lots of stories in addition to the research that you're doing and the book that you have out on this topic too. So, you know, today we're talking about lessons we're still learning after a shift to emergency virtual learning in 2020. It wasn't something that we were planning to do or prepared to do, really that emergency shift. And we're having this conversation 4 years after so many schools shifted to this model. Somehow we're here in 2024. And so before I ask you about what we haven't learned or what we still need to embrace, is there something that we're doing now because of this experience that we just weren't doing before?
Absolutely. So I think one of the things we have all acknowledged that whether we are learning in person or virtually, that there is an aspect of virtual components to learning that's essential. You know, so right now, the kind of current conversation is about integrating AI into our teaching and at what stages is it appropriate and ethical. But we know that there is a virtual component to our teaching that is just here to stay. Where we're struggling sometimes is there is this deep longing to go back to the good old days before the pandemic, which is human nature. But also, we're trying to now understand beyond the emergency, what does this look like? This component, how do we continue to embrace virtual components, you know, in some terms of access? Are there places where they increase access? You know, what does a sick day look like when you're a student now? Does it have to be that you're in a black hole until you get back and then you're scrambling to make up? Are snow days still snow days? Do we still get to have the fun and surprise that kids need in a snow day? Or are they just like every other day, we just go back to that dreaded screen for the whole day? So there's a lot of these types of questions, balancing the good with the things that were challenging and being more intentional about it.
Yeah. And just that level of being intentional, I think, is a massive part of this. And, you know, as you talked about running back to the good old days, right, there is just this sense of embracing like the nostalgia of it all, right? Even though, right, there were some learnings, right, from the models that we all adopted very quickly without, right, that heavy level of intention. So, you know, there are schools that use virtual learning now for snow days or weather closings, like you mentioned, but are there more targeted areas where virtual options could make a difference for reaching all students?
Absolutely. You know, of course, we always have to keep in mind that the equity issue also includes this understanding that to start off, not all students have access to the internet at home in the same levels. So, you know, part of the conversation always has to pay attention to that. But things like rural districts, right? Access to advanced courses, AP courses in smaller schools is challenging because they don't have potentially enough students at one school to do that. But, you know, if we can combine our scheduling and intentionally schedule a class in a district that brings together the students online from multiple schools, then there's an economy of scale there that could really improve access for rural students. And that's one place where, you know, in some ways, as more people moved into more remote areas during, you know, distance learning, but also working online, we're realizing that there's some real opportunities for equitable access in these rural districts. And I think there's just a lot more attention currently being paid to them.
Yeah. And just that idea of scaling, right? The impact. I think it's such an interesting example to consider that although we might use some of these tools for that virtual learning because someone can't physically go to a space, right? Because of snow days, because of weather closings, just the idea that someone, even if they were, right, in a classroom, in a school building, in a district all the time, might not have the same access to the coursework, right? Like those advanced placement or different levels or different things that are of interest to them. So, you know, building upon that idea, right, how is this an issue of educational equity? You mentioned the wireless and internet connectivity. What are the things districts have to pay attention to?
I think there's probably things they're paying attention to within schools. Then there's a community level of attention that districts have to pay. You know, one of the things we learned across all fronts during the pandemic was schools are the central hub of service to so many communities, which is an opportunity and a burden kind of all in itself. So within schools, you know, is there enough technology within the school? Do students have devices? If we're going to require certain components, do they have access within the school to what they need? I think we've gotten pretty good at that. That was the one place where we made some quick advances when we had to. But then it's, you know, when we think about access at home, homework. Is homework equitable? Is it developmentally appropriate? Does everyone have the same resources if they get homework when they're home? And that's a piece that in many ways, we're still struggling to find the right balance. You know, if you have parents at home who have college degrees who can help you when you get stuck, homework is a much more productive activity. But If you're then using the same technologies at home to access schoolwork, but you can't make sense of it when you get stuck, then that's a lot of frustration and time wasted. And I think schools really have to pay attention to then that homeschool connection. Like, how are we making sure that we're differentiating our expectations, but also the supports we then provide when kids come back into the building? And that's where I think there's possibly some space where better communication needs to take place between schools and their constituents, their community, their families. And we just need to talk to each other more. The challenge is, as with most things in education, they get politicized so quickly that sometimes those conversations just don't occur. And one of our goals in the work that we've been doing in my research is really creating those spaces for community and conversation to inform what happens in schools. So there's no such thing as a best practice, right? There is a best practice in a place at a time. And figuring that other time, place component out is such a inclusive thing. We have to have more voices involved in those conversations.
Yeah, that's such a great point about wide recommendations, right? That might not be applicable, right, to a certain environment. And are we really listening to the people in our spaces as opposed to just everyone else, right, who might not have the same challenges or have the same understanding? I think those are such great points to consider for someone who might be listening and is really thinking about what they want to accomplish, right, over the end of the school year, or prepare, right, for the upcoming school year if they already have summertime in mind. And, you know, speaking of the seasons, right, we're finishing out the winter season, moving well into spring here, but that doesn't mean that respiratory illness from the past few months, right, from the winter time where it might spike a bit, is completely behind us. And of course, this can be an issue, you know, throughout the whole school year. So what can districts do to support all of their students as they deal with these type of very real challenges?
Well, so this, I think, is a space where we have a lot of experience now that we're too quickly leaving in the past. So for example, you know, it wasn't uncommon that first year after the pandemic year for schools to have some students online and some at home that were in a hybrid format. Everyone hated it, right? Like I think that universally nobody liked that. But instead of thinking of that as a model for doing education, that might be a great way to handle sick days. You know, when there's the triple-demic of flu and RSV and COVID happening and just rolling in and out, there's a real challenge for teachers to manage keeping everyone kind of moving and catching up. But something as simple as opening up that Zoom link to kids at home who want to join in, to whatever level they're able to engage when they're sick, interact, engage, just so they don't miss what's happened in the classroom. And they can still go and complete their assignments on whatever the makeup policy is. But there's this aspect of connection that technology provided for us that we shouldn't let go of, because it actually has really powerful impacts on students staying engaged when they miss school for whatever reason. But also, you know, and this is the second piece that I've really been considering, is our technologies also have such great power to connect socially and emotionally. A lot of our conversations focused on academic learning loss have really not taken into consideration enough the social losses, the losses of just normal childhood experiences with our peers and outside of our homes. And we probably need to think more on how we can use our technologies to support that. You know, from something broad, like there's just not enough therapists and counselors in this country. But even more so in our day-to-day, if I'm homesick as a student, wouldn't it be nice if I had a buddy assigned in class who would just connect with me and say, hi, how are you doing? Is there anything you're worried you missed? And building that level of community is just good for us in society. It teaches important social skills. And that's one way we can look at these technologies, not as threatening to something good and wholesome, but we could use them for things that are really positive and powerful.
Those are such great examples that I think educators can really see in practice, right? They understand what it's like to lose connection with a student for 7 or 10 days while everyone at home is sick and they're at home, you know, sick too with their brothers and sisters or whoever it might be, right? And just that idea of fostering a connection, not losing momentum completely, and right, realizing that there are some ways to continue using technology, even if we've put some things right to the side. So, you know, for some listeners, they might feel like their district isn't thinking deeply about this issue or prioritizing it. And, you know, what are some strategies a teacher could use to support their students, but also reduce the burden on themselves when kids miss school?
Well, it's funny you should say that. I'm going to make a shameless plug for the book I've just written, where we have several case studies of strategies educators used during the pandemic. But the thing that I think might be helpful directly to educators is each chapter ends with a series of reflection questions throughout the book, just to think about how we can support our schools and communities in whatever role we play related to education. And for teachers, I think some of the places where there's some good thinking involved is, who are we asking questions to? How are we involving our students in the decision-making process, right? So one of the things that students learn in school is sort of how to be individual humans outside of the home. And so there's so many opportunities that kids can take on for leadership, for sort of ownership of that classroom community, for building a support network for each other and their peers. I have a teenager right now in high school, and he got the flu and missed a week of school. And you know, one of his teachers just had a chat. They just have a group chat that they use to communicate about assignments. But even just that level of connection meant that his peers knew he was out and could reach out and say, hey, in case you missed this, or how are you feeling? Can I offer you notes for something? And then just building that environment took a lot of pressure off of his teacher because there was a revolving door of students coming in. Mm-hmm. So I think within each of our classrooms, we could probably think about, who are some of our students who would benefit from these opportunities at leadership? And sometimes, you know, here's another equity issue. The students who might not be doing as well on the content have really strong leadership and connection skills, and it gives them a chance to shine and engage in the classroom in a really positive way as well.
That's such a great recommendation, because so many teachers are already in some type of learning management system where it's not that challenging to set up a new section, right, or a new group within that space already. And they can have an ad hoc, right, just something that's just for a couple of weeks, maybe just for, you know, the winter season, whatever it is, maybe having a couple kids just be the leads to check in a couple times a day or share a resource or some sort of positive vibe to that group of students, right, who just want to know somebody is there for them. So I think that's a very actionable tip for someone who is struggling to maintain that connection and just wants to make sure everyone is feeling good, right? Even if they're not physically in the classroom or not operating, you know, at 100%, right, as they're home and recovering. So can you tell us more about your book and what led you to write this?
So it's called Public Education in Turbulent Times and Innovative Strategies for Leadership and Learning. And my co-author, Javed Siddiqui, who was a former Secretary of Education in the state of Virginia and a former superintendent, brought a real great leadership policy lens. And me, as a former K-12 teacher and a learning scientist, brought a real teacher lens. And what we did is, as we were reading all this news about the struggles that schools and communities through during the pandemic, we realized that we wanted to document some of the most heroic stories of innovation. Like, you know, schools just dug deep and teachers did amazing things that no one expected them to. So the book has 4 case studies to start off from different parts of the country. So New York City, a small community outside LA, Minneapolis, and one in Lubbock. So we tried to hit all kinds of geographic locations. And we talked to educators, so leaders and teachers in each place, about one of the biggest challenges they were facing and how they faced it. So, you know, as you might recall, the Bronx in New York City had an incredibly high death rate. And so they had to really innovate around supporting students' mental health during lockdown. And now, as we are currently in a mental health crisis for our teens in this country, mm-hmm. a lot of those lessons are very valuable to consider. So we have a case study talking to them. We have a case study looking at just the dangers of school. And if you're in Texas, where you didn't close down schools for very long, and we have people coming back in before there's a vaccination available, how did those students, you know, they did great jobs keeping students safe while mm-hmm. in somewhat dangerous territory. And some of the strategies in depoliticizing the issue mm-hmm. to really think about safety yeah. For that context. So there's some different components for each case study. And really the second half of the book is some really great advice and models on how we can all, whoever we are and whatever stake we have in education, teacher, leader, parent, community member, how do we engage to support the schools in our community? You know, what can we bring to the table? What questions can we ask? Because ultimately, the thing we learned through this work is schools are really central to every community. Mm-hmm. And whether we have students in them or not ourselves, our taxes pay for them, you know, we have a role to play in ensuring that they're successful. And everyone's voice matters, right? We all bring something unique to the table. So our hope is that book, with its many opportunities to reflect, will be supportive for people as we all kind of think together on what comes next. How do we want our schools to look, and how can we all have a positive contribution to it?
Well, we will make sure to link out to the book so anyone listening right now can find it and learn more. For someone who's maybe on the move or listening in as they're tackling a few different tasks during their day, where can they connect with you? Where can they learn more about your work?
Oh, fantastic. Well, they can look up my research lab, which is the Context of Learning and Development Lab at Clemson. They can also follow me on Twitter. I am EduProf Jamil, so EduProf Jamil, Jamil. And I love hearing from people as they're engaged in real issues in the field because, you know, ultimately all the work we do is for the teachers and the students and just the amazing things that are happening in our classrooms. And we want to be a part of it in a meaningful way. So anything that we can do that, we love to engage.
Well, thank you so much, Dr. Jamil, for your time today, for sharing these pieces of advice and resources with listeners.
Thank you so much for having me.
It was so much fun talking with Dr. Jamil about this topic, especially hearing her perspective with some distance from something we all experienced just a few years ago. So let's make this EdTech easy with a few key points from today's episode. Keep an open dialogue with families to hear what they need. Leverage virtual learning experiences to help scale opportunities for students. Look for ways to maintain connections when students are learning from home. Remember, you can find the show notes and the full list of resources from this episode, including all the ways to connect with Dr. Jamil, by heading to classtechtips.com/podcast and finding today's episode number 261. Thanks again to our friends at WeVideo for sponsoring today's episode. Visit wevideo.com/education to start your free 30-day trial of WeVideo and get instant access to powerful multimedia tools, interactive elements, ready-made video projects for students, and more. This March, we'll celebrate 5 years of the Easy EdTech podcast. To help celebrate, I'm hoping you can do us a favor. Leave a rating or review for the podcast wherever you're listening today. Spotify will let you tap on the stars, and Apple Podcasts will let you tap on the stars too, and leave a 1 or 2 sentence review. A big thank you in advance for helping us get ready to celebrate this March.